Welcome to this week's Key Voices. I'm Eva Jozefkovic, bringing you a roundup of the latest education news and an interview with our special guest today, Sir Andrew Carter, CEO of South Farnham Educational Trust. First of all, the news. In the news this week, the Ofsted Chief Inspector has called for the outstanding school exemption to be lifted as more schools lose their Ofsted grade. Only 16% of outstanding primary and secondary schools inspected this year kept their Ofsted rating, according to statistics released this week. Schools suspected of off-rolling will be named in a nationwide survey. Anne Longfield told the Commons Education Select Committee. She also said that schools should stay open late to tackle knife crime. Ofsted could downgrade schools that create unsustainable data workloads for teachers, according to Chief Inspector Amanda Spielman. She also said Ofsted doesn't need to see data about the gap between disadvantaged pupils and their peers within individual schools. Also this week, the TES has reported that schools in a growing number of areas are being targeted by coordinated campaigns attacking LGBT content in lessons. MPs have signed a pledge to support schools promoting equality among growing anxiety around parent protest. Nurseries in England's poorest areas are facing closure because of a shortfall in government funding, a charity has said. A report by the Early Years Alliance found 17% of childcare providers surveyed in the most deprived areas of the country anticipate closure in the next 12 months. And the TES has reported that the school a child attends only accounts for a relatively small fraction of the variation in exam results achieved by secondary school pupils. The Better Schools for All report also says that the increased use of performance-related pay and performance monitoring are ineffective in schools. And now on to our interview series. This week, we are speaking to Sir Andrew Carter, CEO of the South Farnham Educational Trust. Welcome, Sir Andrew.
Thank you for inviting me.
We know that you are passionate about ending teacher shortages in England. Could you tell us a bit about where you think the sector is going wrong in terms of recruitment and what kind of changes you might recommend?
Well, I'm not sure it's going wrong. The issue is that we need 35,000 teachers, new teachers, each year. It's a very easy number to remember. It's exactly the same size as the British Navy. So we're recruiting the British Navy in graduates annually. And when you look at it in that task, it's not surprising that there are some errors around the margins. People want to be teachers. Most people, if asked if they wanted to change their job, over 50% say they would like to be a teacher, which actually is really very encouraging. But the routes into teaching and how to become a teacher are not easy. And also, lots of people think they can become teachers, but in actual fact, they probably can't, because it's not just a matter of knowing your subject, your maths, physics, or whatever it might be. There is a mindset. You need to be very socially aware. You need to have a sense that you want to do good by the community, and that actually is quite hard to do. So, what could we do? We can reach out. Every school should have on their entrance desk, on their website, which is the entrance desk now, a bidding to become a teacher. And it's well worth all of us just looking on the website of any school in England and seeing if you went there as someone who wanted to become a teacher, is there somebody in that school who is actually reaching out to draw you in? I'll give you another little statistic here. There are 22,000 schools in England, there or thereabouts, depending on how you sort of count them. If every school made one teacher a year, we're almost there. If every school made two teachers a year, I know the sums are pretty straightforward, we'd have a surplus. The task is enormous, and yet when broken down into that sort of level, is quite simple.
That's really interesting when it's put that way. I've never considered it that way before. And when you were talking about schools just then, I wondered actually whether there's something also around getting pupils interested in the teaching profession from an early age.
Well, I think so. What are the games that children play on the playground at home? People like to play schools. And why? Because the school teacher, when you're very young, is the most important person in your life outside of the family, and sometimes, you know, most important including the family. And it's the first person you come across who looks after you and cares for you in society away from the family. So it's not surprising that people have a warm feeling about school. Certainly should do, and it's terrible if they don't. Now, what we could do is make sure that children, very young ones, see that people that are in schools, are good people to work with, to be around. As they get older, then actually start to explain to them how you might like to become a teacher. And in secondary schools, when a child leaves at 16, send them a birthday card on their 17th birthday and say, how are you? How are the A-levels going? On their 18th birthday, hope the A-levels went well. Are you off to university? In the first year of their university, send them another birthday card and say, would you like some holiday work? In their second year, thinking about becoming a teacher, would you like to come to us next year? We could offer you a job. This is about actually saying to people, drawing them in. Now, lots of people will say, oh, I really don't want to be a teacher. That's fine, because we don't need them all. Remember, we only need two for every school. And lots of people want to become teachers, and youngsters really are good at it. And so I think there's a lot we can do there, because once they've left, the tie is gone, often it's hard to get back in. We must also make sure that youngsters see teachers as people to be admired. Because children, I call them children, even though you're 18, they're young. Youngsters, they don't want to join a profession which is seen to be full of cynics, sad people in their terms. So we need to be people who are admirable to them. And there needs to be someone on the staff of every school who is making sure that the children get that great message.
That's brilliant advice there. I love that idea of sending the cards. I think that's genius. And sort of on the flip side, because I think that we were speaking there about getting people into the profession from the outset, so as the first thing that they do in their career. Would you have any advice for recruiting more senior staff, so middle leaders, more experienced teachers? I think that's something that some of our members often ask us about.
If we're talking there about people that are already teachers and trying to hang on to them and to make sure that they move, you want teachers to move between schools. The one thing you don't want is someone to go to a school and stay there for 40 years, although that's admirable and fine, and there will be people who do very well at that. What you have to do is to ensure that on your staff there are opportunities. If you worked for someone, I was very fortunate, I worked for someone who made sure you could do something different every year. And what we need to make sure is in schools that teachers are being given opportunities, but one of the great opportunities they're given is the opportunity to leave. Because some schools hang on to people far too long. And then maybe someone comes as an NQT, newly qualified teacher, works with you for 2 or 3 years, and you realise they've got some talent, but they would be really advised to go and broaden their experience. What a school needs to do is to be able to go to them and say, look, we love you, we'd like you to stay, but it's time for you to grow up and move somewhere else and perhaps to do something. But at the same time, you're bringing somebody else from another school to gain some more experience with you. In a school such as this, we've had lots of people leave to be promoted. I mean, I'll give you the statistics. 37 people have become head teachers from here and 29 become deputies. Now, somebody said to me, how do you say goodbye to all these wonderful teachers? And here is the secret. You look them straight in the eye, shake them by the hand and say goodbye and thank you. But then you look to the door to the person you've recruited because you know what you're looking for. You know what you can offer them. You go to that person, you look them straight in the eye, shake them by the hand and say, my God, I've been waiting for you. Because we have to get into a culture in schools, staff change, and we need to look after them and manage that change. Don't let it happen by accident. Because when it happens by accident, you also appoint people by accident. And it's too important to do it that way. Staff are 80% of your costs, but 100% of your success.
I think that's a really important statistic there at the end that we must always stay mindful of. Thank you very much for that. You did say that sort of before you let them go, you obviously build up their experience and you nurture them. And that's something else that I wanted to ask about, because in the past you've mentioned that you felt that teacher training should be managed in-house. Why do you think that this is the right way to go?
Well, as you know, I wrote a report for the government in 3 years ago on called the Carter Review on teacher training. All teachers in England are trained in schools, no matter whether they're HEIs or in schools, because they have to do 120 days per year in school during their training. And so even if they're at an HEI, they have to be in schools. But what we need to make sure is that when they come into schools, that we aren't just letting them run the class. This is an opportunity to get someone in so we can all go and do something else. We actually need to nurture them, teach them and show them. I'll give you an example. Teaching mathematics is one thing. Teaching a class mathematics is another. With a class, you've got to deal with their parents. You've got to deal with the planning. You've got to deal with the assessment. You've got to do all those things. And what we often do is get teachers to manage these extraneous things just by experience, see how it goes. If a teacher comes into school rather, and they're 23 years old, and they're going to deal with a parent who's 40 on open evening, this is actually quite a difficult situation. And so we need to nurture teachers through that and give them some techniques, the bedside manner of being a teacher. If you're going to do assessment, there are techniques there. You don't just work it out, and it's not based upon what should happen in your school, that you just happen to be in a good one or happen to be in a bad one. There must be a way, in a systematic way, of building the profession. We would not expect a doctor to have training based upon which particular surgery they actually were working in. So there needs to be working on the job, but there is also the important element that universities and the higher education institutions need to be involved too. This isn't either or, this is a partnership. But what we must make sure is that we in schools really understand how to nurture teachers. I just come back to this thing. If you fail with your teachers, you failed with everything in schools. There is nothing in school, there is no decision you make which is more important than the appointment and then the nurturing of staff. Teachers no longer want jobs, they want careers. And when someone has a career, you need to be aware that they all start off in different positions, but therefore you have to have a facility for that. You need to spot that on your staff there's somebody who's really clever, really going places, going to be a deputy head. And they can be that after 3 or 4 years if they're bright. Mm. They don't have to do their time and you have to wait until you've been through all the things. There's others who don't want to do that. They want to do other things. So have we got opportunities in school for all staff to grow and develop? So schools, we're there to teach children. We just need to use the same principles and add it to our staff.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. Actually, as you were talking, something occurred to me, because you were saying that there are sometimes brilliant members of staff who you can see rising up to the level of, for example, a deputy head. But often we get asked the question of, if somebody is a really, really brilliant teacher and they're great in the classroom, what do we do with people like that who maybe don't want to take on the kind of managerial responsibility of a sort of a middle leader or even a senior leader? How do you sort of keep them motivated and keep them rewarded in a sense?
Well, I think that absolutely is important. And if you think about it, statistically, of course, there are more people who are teaching. You know, not everybody wants to be a leader, and thank the Lord, because not everybody can become a leader. We should develop and celebrate the concept of the master teacher. The master teacher should have higher status, possibly, than the head teacher. With higher status comes other things, like money. And schools do have the flexibility to pay people more. Most schools will say they don't have the money to do it. You'll never have the money to do it unless you have the will. I often use the example, if you buy a house or rent a house or rent a flat, wherever you live, there is some money exchanged between you and someone for the right to have it. But your house is not your home based upon your rent. It's what you put extra in it that turns it from a house to a home. So when we look at schools, the salary is not what makes the teacher. It's what is the salary plus. And there is nothing more, but people do need to be paid a little more. They need to be given opportunity to do master's degrees. We need to be able to go round and head teachers to look into a classroom and say to someone, I have never seen anything quite as remarkable as that. That's fantastic. Can you come and tell all the staff at the staff meeting on Monday? I can't tell you how much people love that. But there must be a structure, a pay structure in school, which actually reflects that. Now, you know, it isn't possible to pay everybody what they want, because the reality is most people don't want lots of money. But I think we should honour the teacher. And in fact, I mentioned about someone going to a school early and staying for 40 years. If they stay in the classroom, whether it's in the same school or not, for 40 years and become the, you know, the great master teacher, well, that's the one that everybody wants. It's very difficult because our structures are all about leadership, national qualifications for headship. Are we going to be a CEO of a MAT? These are what people aspire to. And if we're not careful, we get people after 4 or 5 years want to leave the classroom.
Exactly.
And when they leave the classroom, they're doomed to a life of unhappiness because not everybody is going to the top. So the culture in the school is the greatest people are the teachers. They're the back. We sit on their back. And if you want to find the best teachers, in my view, but I would say this, go and look at a master in reception. In reception, the master teacher is just something to behold. And the reason for that is young children won't do as they're told. They will do it because they're inspired and they have this wonderful organisation. Older children may sit there and be bored. Young ones won't. So we should admire that. That should be the core to the school. And I look at governors' agendas. Does this ever talk about teaching and learning? And tonight we'll have a conversation with our master teachers. But it does have conversations about the buildings and about the finance and about all those things are not unimportant. But, you know, the real issue in school, of course, is that there is money. That's how we decide to spend it. We'd all like more. But I could talk to you about money forever, but I won't.
Thank you so much for that. Sort of on the flip side, because I think we spoke about something really important, which is recognising very good, very experienced teachers and celebrating them in the right way. I also think that there are some teachers, certainly we've come across them at the Key, who are ready to make a step into a leadership role and want to make that step, but are quite fearful of everything that that entails. Because a lot is said about the fact that running a school is a lot like being the CEO of a business, much more like being the CEO of a business than it is being a teacher in some ways. So how do you, I suppose, prepare them for that next step and upskill them into that role that they aspire to be promoted into?
That is an important thing to do because there's nothing worse to give someone a job for which they are not properly prepared. You can't prepare for everything, but you, as I mentioned earlier about nurturing a teacher for an open evening so that you help them with the bedside manner. If someone is going to be a leader, you have to say, what are the skills of leadership? Now, there are many courses on the skills of leadership. I'm not really cynical about those courses, but there is just a little bit of a problem that often you see exercises around in trays, you know, what's in an in tray. And if you're a leader, you'll be able to sort that out really very effectively and so on. It seems to me those are really the periphery things. The thing that makes a great leader in a school and probably in other jobs as well, but certainly in schools, is someone who can relate to other human beings and can understand their problems and, more importantly, find solutions to them. So what we do to upskill people is from their very earliest days when they're teaching with us, NQTs and NQT plus one and plus two, is put them into situations where they have to lead challenging circumstances. And it may well be around coordination of a subject. There's a great one now. If you were looking at Prevent or the new sex education programs, there's always something new. Make sure that you work in teams in schools. So you've got the experienced leader and the NQT who is part of that team. And bearing in mind that the NQT may well have the better ideas, we've got to get into the mind that just because you're young in this profession, we must really understand you have wonderful ideas and we want to work with them. So you give them the opportunity to lead, you give them the opportunity to talk to governors, you give them the opportunity to stand up in front of parents and lead, but always with that caring bit, you know, you take them to the edge of the cliff and you push and they push back and then you push again and then when you finally push, they leap and they fly. Now, the key here is that you don't want to push them and they plummet. So it's a game. It's like fly fishing, you know. It's a very delicate art. From that will come the geniuses, the genii, the ones that actually have got it. They have it as a natural thing. But I do think there are many people who can do it through training. And the real concept is to understand that in your school are potentially a whole range of very clever, bright people who can do the job better than you. Many heads start from the Mughal emperor concept, that they are the head and everybody else will have to sort of bow to their concepts. And that's the reason why schools sometimes fail or do well, and then when the head leaves, fail. Because what schools should be creating is an institutional memory. You capture that which works and pass it on to the next generation, write it down, pass it on, write it down, so that not each generation doesn't have to start from scratch. Now, at the end of that, you will lose people. Hence my mentioning earlier, they'll go. But it doesn't matter, because if you've worked out how to create them, then you've got to create them and the cycle goes round. There are some youngsters here, started in September, who I think, in the right environment, could almost be deputies now. People will think that's heresy. But they could do it, not alone, because they haven't had the breadth of experience yet, but they sure as hell know how to run places. They sure as hell know how to work with people. And there are people who in the school, and I came back to this thing about the master teacher, who the children admire and aspire to be like. That's what a leader is about.
That's, I think, a very, very sort of brilliant, succinct way of putting, you know, sort of the definition of a good leader and a good teacher as well. Thank you very much for that. And finally, we ask all of our guests our key question. Given everything that we've been talking about today, if you had one piece of advice for schools to act on, what would it be?
Oh, one piece of advice. I think that you mentioned earlier about businesses and schools, as you go further up, become businesses, and perhaps we shouldn't really go that way. I think that we should. I think we should understand this is a business, but it's not a business in a commercial sense. Our product, if you like, is a healthy, well-rounded, well-educated child, and you could define what well-educated is, but we could have that discussion. And it's a business that employs people to do that, and it has a building that is required to make it happen. If you lose sight of that and become self-indulgent about the small little things, often if you talk to teachers, they want to remind you all the time, and they will use the word how much they love the child and how much care they're putting into it. And all of that is absolutely crucial. We don't need to say it in every sentence. We know that is the case. People who work in schools care for children. But it is a business, because it isn't for one day, it isn't for one month, it's for a long, long time. So it has to be set up so the teachers can feel secure with their job, the parents and the children can come to school knowing it's okay, it'll be there next year, and it's doing well. And the last piece of advice I would give anybody is, do not get into confrontation with governments. Governments are elected to do their job. And if we in schools don't believe in democracy, what do we believe in? And governments will come and governments will go, of all political persuasions. What we should be doing in school is have such professional expertise that the government of whatever persuasion come to us and say, how can we make this happen everywhere?
Brilliant. Thank you very much for speaking to us today. I think some very, very valuable advice there. Thank you very much for listening. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Special thanks to Sir Andrew for talking to us today. Members of The Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education at thekeysupport.com.